Greetings, all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 110, and we are in chapter 23 of the book of Luke. And in verse 54, we read last time that the time when they put Jesus Christ in the rock, that particular day, in verse 54, we read that day was the preparation and the Sabbath drew near. You see, the day when he was crucified, it was not on a holiday, it was on the day of preparation. Preparation for what? Preparation for the Sabbath. What Sabbath? Is it a weekly Sabbath? Well, obviously not. It was not a weekly Sabbath, even though in the Catholic world they believed it was a weekly Sabbath because that's all they know. They didn't have much knowledge and understanding of the Scripture. And they thought, well, it's got to be Friday. You see, so they have the Friday concept, Good Friday, and the Friday, crucifixion and so forth. And that's their understanding to this very day. And they have a difficult time, figuring out, so they have to justify it. You know, what does it mean, 3 days and three nights? You know, if he was crucified on Friday, how did he get 3 days and three nights there when he's resurrected from their point of view? Early Sunday morning, at sunrise, you see? And in either case, they're not correct there. But there are those, and on the other hand, that think that this Sabbath, again, they understand that it is the weekly, that is the annual Sabbath. It's a holiday, not the weekly Sabbath. But they have a difficulty when it comes to Pentecost in this area. And to this very day, there are discussions back and forth which day it is, because at the time the Sadducees felt a certain way, but Pentecost, when do you supposed to count? And the Sadducees had a different idea. And the Pharisees were the ones in charge. They said in the seat of Moses, they were the ones that were calling the shots, even in the temple, even though they could not, sacrifice themselves, but, they were in charge of the religion at the time. And obviously, they kept it on Sivan 6, and the reason for that, because when they went to Leviticus, which also the Sadducees went to Leviticus, and they had a certain understanding, while the Pharisees understood it differently. And mind you, it was all the Sadducees that Christ said, you do not know the Scriptures. Doesn't mean that you don't know anything of the Scriptures, but he's saying that you've got holes in your understanding. You know, they did not understand the resurrection. And one reason for that, because they basically followed Moses, just like the Samaritans, and they did not accept the teachings of the prophets. So they did not want to believe what they read later on in Joshua or the Pharisees did. And we'll go through a couple of comments here, not too many, because we already covered that in the first series. Also want to go back to that, go to the section of Leviticus 23 and some other places where we discussed it. Well, I'll just bring some more comments here, because some people still have, obviously, some questions about it. And they have, their own understanding in a certain way. And so in Leviticus 23, this is a place where all the holidays of God, beginning with the Sabbath, that's the first holiday, which means an appointed season. All of these were appointed season. Where you come, we have an appointment with God. Official appointments. Beside all the time that you appear before God, every day and night, 24 hours that you serve Him and worship Him, and people who were in Jerusalem, they could go to the temple every day. But their official dates to appear before God, where the whole congregation is commanded, since it is a holy assembly. You see, it's not a choice. And the first one that God talked about here in Leviticus 23 is a Sabbath. The weekly one, and after that he begins to talk about all the other Sabbaths, the annual Sabbaths, but all of them are called Sabbath because all of them had the same terminology. All the Sabbath, he says, you shall do no manner of work, and on every single holiday he repeated the same terminology, you shall do no manner of work, with the exception that on the Sabbath, the weekly one, and on the Day of Atonement, that were called Shabbat Shabbaton, Sabbath, total Sabbath of cessation of work, you see, Shabbaton, Shabbat Shabbaton, in Hebrew you have this way of using the language where if you want to stress something, you say it double, in a double way, you see, and Shabbat Shabbaton is basically that, to show that it is stronger, more severe, more restrictive, and things like that, and you generally don't find it in other languages. But this is what God is trying to convey here. And yet on the annual Sabbath, he allowed a certain amount of work, not work in terms of going to work and making money or working in the field, but, to do your cooking, light cooking on the Sabbath, certain preparations. And to this very day, go to the Orthodox Jewish community, and you see that on the annual Sabbath, they do some cooking, not necessarily heavy type. The heavy type they do before that. That's what the day of preparation. But light kind of cookings, things like that, they still do on the Sabbath. If it is an annual Sabbath, but if it falls on the weekly Sabbath, they wouldn't do it. You see? So there's a little difference between them, but every single one of them is extremely important, even though some may think, the weekly Sabbath is important, the others are not as important. Every one of them is extremely important in the sign of God. How can anybody say that the Passover, is not an important annual Sabbath, where the most major events happened in the history of Israel and yet to occur in the future on that annual Sabbath and did not happen on the weekly Sabbath? You see, each one has a different purpose and role and goal and reason in the plan of God. But all of them are very important. And so in verse 10 we read, he comes to the Feast of Pentecost after Passover, which is the annual Sabbath. It's a Sabbath. It's annual, but it's a Sabbath, day of rest, a holy convocation, no manner of work, field or your job is to be done on that day. And so he says to them, verse 10, speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give to you and reap its harvest, you see, that means as soon as you enter into the land and you are not going to reap its harvest. So he's giving them an information here about what's going to happen in the future. When you enter, that's when you harvest. See, it's not that you enter there and you work the field and then 6 months later when it's all ready, you harvest the crop. No, as soon as they entered into the land in springtime, in Passover time, you see, there was a harvest there to harvest. It was ready. And so we'll get to a few more details about it. And so it says when you do that, it was a special event, then at that point you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. That's the first thing that you should do. And he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted on your behalf. You see, it's on your behalf. Now, it's not on the Lord's behalf. And some people have forgotten that. It's on your behalf. It's for you. Just like many of the sacrifices that God commanded Israel. When you commit this kind of sin or that kind of sin, or when you want to bring a peace offering or things like that, that's what you offer it on your behalf. You see, for yourself. And so this was going to be the same thing. It's for yourself that you offer it. And, as people later on began to understand more and more that all the sacrifices and everything else points to Jesus Christ, therefore God also, that all of them also pointed toward Israel. You see, it was Israel who was bringing the peace offering. It was Israel that was committing sins and iniquities and therefore needed to be atoned for. And yet Jesus Christ is the one that was willing to be the atonement and the peace of Israel. You see, as Isaiah said, the chastising of our peace he had taken upon himself. So he had peace offering and he had sin offering and guilt offering and all kind of things like that. But as we mentioned that in the first series, unless you understand that both are involved, it's not only for the Lord, it's not only Christ, but it's also Israel. It's for both. You see? And when people forget that, they point everything only toward Christ and they forget about the bride. You see? And this is in essence what he's saying here. It is for you that you offer it. And you shall bring the sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest and he shall wear the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted on your behalf. On the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. Now, the beginning of the chapter, he was talking about the weekly Sabbath, and then he began to talk about the annual Sabbath. And so the question was, and has been, to this very day, which Sabbath is he talking about? And the Pharisees maintained that it was, and mind you, when the Pharisees maintained that, it was not based on the fact that just rose up one day and decided that this is the way it's going to be. You see, long before the Pharisees appeared on the scene, there was already there the Septuagint, which was the most commonly used Bible at the time, the translation, because the majority of the Jewish community was worldwide. You see, and most of them did not speak Hebrew, and so they were reading the Septuagint. And in the Septuagint, the translation of the 70, you see, all the 70 that translated the Bible, they all wrote on the morrow of the Passover. You see, none of them wrote on the morrow of the Sabbath because they realized that of the confusion that is there. When you go to the other languages and other nations, people, you know, if you read on the morrow of the Sabbath, they're going to be confused because they don't necessarily have the proper knowledge and understanding. So to resolve this confusion in the minds of people, they just translated on the morrow of the Passover, knowing that this is what it meant. And if you went to the Targum, which was the Aramaic translation of the Bible, there it says on the morrow of the Pascha. You see? Again, the Passover. Pascha, that's in Aramaic for Pesach. And if you went to the Jerusalem Bible, you see, it says on the 16th, very plainly, when it was supposed to be. And Josephus tells us that so it was in the temple, that the high priest offered, you know, the wave sheaf on the 16th. So the Pharisees were not coming up with those ideas on their own. You see, that was already an established knowledge and understanding from the beginning of time. And so we'll have a few more details here to clarify that. And sometimes, you know, there are certain things that no matter how much information you give, people still are convicted, you know, by their own convictions, and therefore that's the only way they can see it. And so he says here, and you shall offer on that day when you wave the sheaf a male lamb of the first year without blemish as a burnt offering to the Lord. You see? Now notice the terminology. That you shall bring, in verse 10, a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. Verse 11, he shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted on your behalf. But here when it talks about the lamb, he says, and you shall offer on that day when you wave the sheaf, which is on your behalf, now you're going to offer also a male lamb of the first year without blemish as a burnt offering to the Lord. And there it doesn't say on your behalf. You see, there is, you know, a little distinction here. And when you understand the entirety of the story, you begin to understand the importance of that. That there are certain things that Israel has to do for her behalf, and there are certain things that God is going to do for them. And so this was a burnt offering to the Lord. And then it talks about the grain offering that you bring with it, and the amount of it, and the sweet savor that goes with it, sweet aroma. And then you read again in verse 14, a command that is related to that. You shall eat neither bread, nor parched grain, that is roasted grain, nor fresh grain, you know, the green ear corn, until the same day that you have brought an offering to your God. You see? So there was an inhibition and a prohibition here, and a command against eating these three things, you see, either the bread that you're going to make from the harvest, that you're going to harvest as soon as you enter into the land, or roasted grain, you cannot take the grain and roast it and eat it, or you cannot even take the green corn and eat it, because you can eat it in either way, you see, just like the disciples of Christ. You know, they were going through the cornfields, that is the wheat field, that's what it means. And they were, you know, plucking the wheat, and then they're taking the corn out of it, you know, the seeds, without roasting it, obviously. They're just walking, so they were eating it raw. That's green, you see. And other times, when you have time, you would roast it, and you could eat it that way. And then, if you wanted, which most people did most of the time anyway, you see, they would grind the corn and make bread out of it. So there were three ways of eating it. And God says, can't eat it either way. You see, either bread that you made from the corn, or roasting it and you eat it that way, or just eating it raw. He said you can't do any of that until you have brought an offering to your God. That's the wave sheaf that you do on the morrow of the Sabbath. And he said it shall be a statute forever throughout your generation in all your dwellings. So what happens now? When the children of Israel enter into the land. In this very statement that God told them, that when you enter into the land and you harvest, you see, the ripe, it was ripened already, harvest, at that time it was springtime, you see, you have the barley, and after that comes the wheat. The wheat comes later, Pentecost, and then, you know, and the barley comes in springtime. So, you know, you could make bread either of the barley or the wheat. And from the barley, they also made beer. And so here it is, the fulfillment, in essence, of these statements. Now the children of Israel, in the book of Joshua, we read in chapter 5 and verse 10, now the children of Israel camped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at even, at twilight. You see? In other words, you come to the 14th day, just like you come to Friday. At the end of Friday, you know, you begin to keep the Sabbath. So, you come to the 14th day. At the end of the 14th day, you begin to keep the Sabbath. Only it is an annual Sabbath, Passover. You see, because some people still do that confusion in their mind. They think the 14th day means the evening before that. It doesn't mean that. That was something that is known only to certain, you know, few people on the face of the earth, and yet the overwhelming majority, you see, of people that have kept the Sabbath and the annual holiday and the Passover, they always knew the exact timing. Yet some people think, the Jews were in error. They kept the Passover in the wrong time, and Christ, you know, ate the Passover at the right time, not believing, not understanding, not comprehending what John made very plainly. That evening, that Lord's Supper was before the Passover, before the feast. You see, not on the feast. And then he was crucified on the preparation day for the annual Sabbath, for the Passover, which was going to be eaten that very night. So when he was killed, that's when the high priest was killing the lamb for the Passover. And that's when all the people went to the temple and had their lamb sacrificed, and then they went and ate the Passover that night. Anyway, here it says, now the children of Israel camped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at twilight on the plains of Jericho. And along with it, now they are in the land, they are there by Jericho, the harvest is right in front of them, barley harvest, and so they go and harvest it, you see, and they're supposed to do something also, as God told them, on the morrow of that Passover, which they ate, to bring a wave sheaf before the priest, and then to eat of the local produce. And it says here, and they ate of the produce of the land, when? After the Passover. What does it mean? You know? Well, on the morrow of the Passover, after they brought the wave sheaf to the priest, which would make it, you see, the 16th, because on the 15th is the Passover, the evening before. You see, it's not on the 14th, the evening before, but on the 15th, the evening before. That's when the Passover begins. And so, when the Passover was over, the Passover, to begin with, is a meal, which begins the first day of unleavened bread, which is the 15th, of Nisan, which is the first Sabbath of the two Sabbath in Passover, and at times, most of the time, there would be a third one in between, which would be the weekly one. And so after the Passover on the 16th, they ate, you know, the produce of the land. And so the Pharisees and all the men of God before that, those who translated, you know, the Septuagint and the Aramaic Bible and the Jerusalem Bible, whatever manuscripts they had there, they understood what it meant. Leviticus 23, it's talking about the Passover, because when they came to Joshua, he made it very plain when that day was. Before that, you know, there could have been a question about it. But after that, you know, when you read it in Joshua, you know exactly when. You see? Well, the Sadducees were not willing to accept it because they did not accept the prophets. It's because they did not accept the prophets, which began from Joshua, you see, that they were not willing to believe in the resurrection, because they said, well, Moses never talked about the resurrection, and not being willing to accept the words of the prophets that talked about the resurrection, you see, they didn't believe in the resurrection. That was their problem. So they were wrong both on the timing for Pentecost and both on resurrection and many other things too. And not everything, but many other things. And that's what Christ was saying. You do not know the scriptures. It doesn't mean that you don't know anything, you see. Some people like to go from one extreme to the other. They don't understand. Then when you make that statement, they think this is what you mean. Well, Christ didn't mean it that way. So whenever you quote Christ, you certainly don't mean it that way either. And some people, you know, are talking before they think about this matter. They speak before they think about this matter, and they jump the gun. And they assume that you said what you didn't say. You see, just like Christ didn't mean it that, well, you never keep any of the laws of God, so it is anybody who would quote Jesus Christ should also understand that. Certain aspects of the knowledge of God you simply don't have. You lost it. That's what he means by that. And so here we read again, and they ate of the produce of the land on the day after the Passover, unleavened bread and parched grain. That means roasted. On the very same day. You see, on the very same day that God commanded them to eat it after they bring the wave sheaf. And then the manna ceased on the day after they had eaten the produce. So a day later, you see, the manna ceased also. Until then, the manna was needed to be there until the last day, you see. And so they ate. Now some people look at that and says, oh, well, here it is. It says that when they ate the produce of the land on the day after the Passover, and some say, well, you know, to justify their understanding that it's a weekly Sabbath, well, maybe the Passover that day fell on the weekly Sabbath. And so, this is what it says. Well, if God wanted to say that, he would have said on the weekly Sabbath, you know, he said the Passover. You see? And they say, well, here it is. And it says, they ate unleavened bread and parched grain, roasted grain. You see, some people believe, and well, you know, if it says roasted grain, that means the harvest was not ready, you see. And, you know, they didn't eat, the produce of the land, and they could not keep that command of God, you see. And they forget, you know, about the statement that we read before that. God told them, you cannot eat either the bread, you see, that you make from the harvest, or roasted grain, too, you see, or ear corns. So they say, well, since the ear corns, the harvest was not ripe, therefore that year they could not keep the commandment. But they did it the year after that. And they forgot one tiny little detail. What is it that they have forgotten? You see, in terms of the parched grain. Well, let's go back again to Leviticus. Before God gave the instructions about the annual Sabbath and the harvest, and the eating of the harvest, and the bringing of the sheaf offering before the priest, you see, on the morrow of the Sabbath, which is the Passover, he also told them, how does he want that wave sheaf to look like? You see, some people think, well, you know, they went to the field and then they just cut a part, you know, of the wheat there, of the sheaf, you know, in other words, of the grain. And they just took that whole thing and then they waved it. Well, that's not the way it was done. You see, those are people basically that know very little about the law of God and how things were done. No, that's not the way they did it, you see. Those things were being prepared or cut in advance, and then the priest, you know, as time went by, that's the way it became. The priest would go there and they would beat the grain, and he would take the grain, you see, and he would do something with the grain before he could offer it to God. And we're going to read here. In chapter 2 of Leviticus, in verse 14, God says to them, if you offer a grain offering of your first fruit to the Lord, that means when you do it. You see, this is the grain offering of your first fruit to the Lord. You see, how does God want it? You shall offer for the grain offering, and the word here, first fruit, is bikurim. You know, the first thing that is said. The same thing that he said in Leviticus 23 about the first fruit, you know, the feast of the first fruit. You see, the same word, Bikurim. So when you offer your first fruit, just like he gave them the instructions what to do on the morrow of the Sabbath, to cut, you know, the harvest and give the first fruit to God. But how were they going to offer it to him? In what way? In what manner? He says, when you do it, when you bring that grain offering of your first fruit to the Lord, you shall offer for the grain offering of your first fruits green heads of grain. You see, you go over there and you take the green heads of grain, ripe. You see, when it is ripe. So you pluck it and you offer it to God. But how? He doesn't want it green. That is, he doesn't want it green, even though you harvest it green. He says, you shall offer for the grain offering of your fresh fruits, green heads of grain roasted on the fire, grain beaten from full heads. You see? And so when you come to Leviticus 23 and he gives you that instruction about bringing the first offerings, the first fruit, that is to him, you see, that's what he's talking about. You take the harvest, which is supposedly to be ripe, you know, it's supposed to be ripe anyway, you see, otherwise you don't offer it, and you pluck the corn from it when it is still green and ripe, and you roast it, and that's what they did. They went to the field, and they took a sheaf of the offering, and they plucked the grain from it that was green and ripe, and the harvest was made ready, and then they roasted it, the grain, and then they put it in the hands, you know, the priest, the high priest would take, you know, would extend his two hands, and they would put the grain on his hands, you see, or he will take, you know, from that pile of grain himself, whichever, they, you know, it was done exactly, and he would wave his hands with the grain, not with with the sheaf offering, you know, as people think, but the grain that was roasted in his hands was waved to God on behalf of Israel. You see, it was waved on behalf of Israel to show their gratitude toward God. So that sacrifice there, that offering there, was on behalf of Israel. Just like he said, whenever you harvest, you know, your first fruit, the first dough, you bring it to the priest. You see, when you make the dough from it. But here he says, even before you make the dough, you take those grains, you roast them, and you raise them toward God, giving thanks to God for the harvest that he gave you. It was something to be done between Israel and her God. You see, on her behalf, not on his behalf, but on her behalf. And again, some people not having perfect knowledge and understanding of the law of God, you know, they get a little bit mixed up there, and they begin to invent their own doctrines. And so now they think, well, you know, the wave sheaf, you know, when you have the wave sheaf, that's talking about Jesus Christ. You see, God made it very plain to them. Jesus Christ is the one speaking to them. You do it on your behalf, you see. And obviously, you know, there is a relationship there also with Jesus Christ, who, when he was sacrificed, it was on their behalf, not on his behalf. You know, he didn't commit any sin, you see. But also understand, you know, their part, you see. The bride has to be involved in the sacrifice. It's not only Christ, you know. It's not everything pointing to Christ, you see. It's pointing also to the bride. That was her part, and this is what we stressed in that series when we went through the sacrifices in the first series. And so, you know, when people think, well, here it is, and in Joshua it says that they ate roasted grain, that means the harvest was not ripe, that means they ate of the old grain, of the old produce, and it, not only, that means, you know, they could not keep the law at that time, but they had to wait until the next year before they could fulfill that one, you see. And so in the process of this kind of thinking, obviously, they say, well, you know, on the morrow of the Sabbath doesn't mean on the morrow of the Passover, when Joshua made it very plain. What is it that God meant in Leviticus 23? It's on the morrow of the Passover. And so, since that time, that was the only understanding in Israel, and that's why when the Septuagint, you know, was translated from the original by 70 different scholars, every single one of them translated that, knowing what it meant in Israel, how it was kept, on the morrow of the Passover. None of them wrote or translated on the morrow of the Sabbath, because they knew that that would create confusion in the minds of the king in Egypt, of the Talmai dynasty, who wanted to translate, you know, any given book so it would be in his library, and say, not to confuse him or confuse all the scholars or all those who are going to read it. And then, you know, all the Jewish community abroad that, you know, spoke Greek, they were going to use it too. So, you know, they wanted to avoid that confusion in their minds so people would not be divided. So they translated exactly for what it meant. And so it was when the Pharisees kept it on that day, the Pentecost, on the morrow of the Sabbath, you see, 7 weeks later. 7 weeks, seven Sabbath, it's the same, synonymous in Hebrew. A Sabbath and seven are synonymous in Hebrew too. You see, they kept it on the right time. And it just so happened that on the day Christ was crucified, it was a preparation day for the Passover, and it was not a weekly Sabbath. You see, it was an annual Sabbath, and that was on Friday. And that week, that year, you see, and we have a lot of records nowadays that, you know, were not available earlier in terms of astronomy, which is, you know, far more advanced now than it was in the past, and they know exactly when was every single new moon, going all the way back to Adam. And so they know that the new moon, that particular year, on 30 AD, not any other year, on 30 AD, was on Wednesday. And therefore, the 15th of Nisan was on Thursday, Thursday night. So Thursday night began the Passover, the annual Sabbath, and the day on which Christ was crucified was a preparation day for that Sabbath, and then they had the weekly Sabbath right after that. So it was back-to-back Sabbath that particular year. You see? And so, on the morrow of the Sabbath, counting from that time, that first Pentecost, you see, in the book of Acts, happened to be on Sunday. Just because Passover happened to be on Thursday at night, which means Friday, the 15th. You see, it's Friday, it's night to night, even to even. So Thursday night to Friday night was a weekly Sabbath, that was a Passover, and yet it's called the Sabbath throughout the New Testament. And some people say, well, you know, only weekly Sabbath is called Sabbath. Well, throughout the New Testament, the Passover is repeatedly called the Sabbath. And then one account says, and that Sabbath was a high day. But it's a Sabbath, just like the weekly Sabbath. You see? Well, anyway, we thought just to bring some of these comments, because in the minds of some, there would always be a little misunderstanding there. And that's what Jesus Christ, you know, told us through the Apostle Paul. You know, sometimes, you know, do you have faith? Have it yourself. You see? Until we all come to the unity of the faith, learn to live in peace and harmony and unity with others. Okay? In other words, be willing to accept a different understanding on the part of others and not hold it against them. And until God opens our eyes, all of us, and we come to the unity of the faith, and we'll all see it exactly the same way God saw it. And there are those who see it earlier, they're open-minded, and there are those, you know, just have a conviction a certain way, and that's it. No, don't confuse them with the facts anymore after that. Well, all of us are that way to one degree or the other. In either case, God is patient with all of us, and if we show the spirit of humility and kindness and meekness and generosity and willing to understand that, that out of deep conviction sometimes, sincerity, people come to their own conclusions, and after a while, you know, God opens their minds and hearts and they understand better, and then they realize they've been wrong. Until that time, there is no need to throw stones at anybody. Unfortunately, that's the manner of many. You know, they think they're right, and therefore they're going to cast stones at others. Well, there is no need to do that. We must learn. That's the law of God. We must learn to disagree without being disagreeable. And when people learn to do that, they live in harmony and peace. And when people don't know that, even though they may be right in a certain point, they are so disagreeable people, you see, and they cause a lot of division among, you know, the people of God. And that's much worse than being wrong on a point of doctrine or teaching. You see, that's one of the things that God said he hates. He who causes divisions among the brethren. You see, strife. And he didn't say that he hates someone who is wrong on a certain point in doctrine. You see, if you do it sincerely, well, God doesn't hold it against you. Anyway, we'll continue from this point in verse 54. That day was a preparation and the Sabbath drew near. You see? And another point that you find here, we'll come back to that later. Well, let's read. We'll mention it as we get to it. And the women who had come with him from Galilee followed after, and they observed the tomb and how his body was laid. See? So that was happening on Thursday evening, toward the evening, before the Passover was going to begin. You see? That's when they saw it. And just wanted to make sure everything's okay. And they returned and prepared spices. So they had enough time to return, go to the market, you know, buy some spices and fragrant oil, and they rested on the Sabbath according to the commandment. So they prepared the spices, you see, but they could not anoint the body of Christ at that time because time was running out. Now they had to rest, you see, on the Sabbath. What Sabbath again? It's not talking about the weekly Sabbath, it's talking about the annual Sabbath of the Passover. So repeatedly God calls it Sabbath. And so when he go back to Leviticus 23, and when he says, on the morrow of the Sabbath, you see, and you are not willing to accept that it is a weekly, an annual Sabbath, all you're saying here, you know, that you in essence have a difficulty with these scriptures here, where in every gospel, each one of them called it the Sabbath, speaking about the Passover, not the weekly Sabbath. And there was a weekly Sabbath also. And so it is. They rested on the Sabbath according to the commandment, because the commandment was that on a weekly Sabbath or an annual Sabbath, you must rest. You don't do work. And so they rested that way. And so that touches another point, you know, where Boulanger, not having as much knowledge and understanding at the time of astronomy, because it was not as advanced as it is now, it could pinpoint, you know, every new moon every single year, going all the way back to Adam. Well, he thought, and many people followed his understanding, that Passover, that day, was on the evening, you see, Wednesday evening, you see, and then Thursday was the holy day, the 15th. Well, if Thursday was a holy day, you see, then at the end of Thursday, Passover is over. And then you have Friday, which will be another day of preparation, on which day, and in which case, the ladies here could have gone back to the tomb and anointed the body of Christ and prepared his body. You see? But they didn't do any of that. Why? Because it just so happened that that Sabbath was on Thursday night, in the evening, not Wednesday night, that even, and Friday was the 15th, which began the evening before that. You see, prior to that, Jesus Christ was crucified, and the preparation day for Friday, not preparation day for the Sabbath, the weekly Sabbath. So both, you see, the day on which he was crucified, Thursday, was a preparation day, and then that day they didn't have to have a preparation day for Friday, you see, for the Sabbath, the weekly Sabbath, because it was a holy day. So they had one preparation day for two holy days. One was an annual Sabbath, one was a weekly Sabbath. And so they couldn't go back until Sunday morning. You see, early in the morning. That's when they went, and that was the time when they were going to take all the spices and anoint his body, because Sabbath, the Sabbath that year was back-to-back. So it couldn't be on Wednesday. You see, makes it very plain. And, well, it's another point there that some people say, you know, sometimes don't consider. And, you know, relying on old information and just getting stuck with it, and nobody's going to change their mind anymore after that, you know. Well, that's another way we grow in grace and knowledge and understanding. We have to always maintain a measure of humility and meekness and willingness to admit error. And all of us are in error one way or the other. None of us is perfect. We all make mistakes. And yet, when we make, you know, a conviction that we hate our God, it becomes literally our God. You see? Well, no, nobody's going to change our mind after that. That's why Paul said, he that thinks that he stands, you actually think that you stand. You actually think that you stand on the truth. Take heed, he said, lest you fall. That's the reason why he said that. And some of us are not learning that lesson yet. But still, we must live in peace and harmony and unity with one another, and consider and understand that all of us are subject to the same weaknesses and shortcomings. And until we all come to the unity of the faith by the Spirit of God, not by us imposing it on others, you see, and putting down others, then we shall all see exactly the same thing. Well, anyway, this is what we see here. And so we read in verse 56, then they returned and prepared spices and fragrant oils, and they rested on the Sabbath, which was a Passover, Thursday night, according to the commandment. And, you know, Friday they all went to the temple, because that was a holy assembly, holy convocation. The whole country, you know, the whole nation was there, and the Jewish community from abroad, many of them came there. There were about 2 million, Josephus tells us, in those days in Jerusalem. Then we read in chapter 24, now on the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they and certain other women with them came to the tomb, bringing the spices which they had prepared, because Passover that year was not, as some people say, Wednesday night, and then Thursday morning, you know, they went to the temple for the holiday, the 15th, you see, because if it was, then Friday they would have done that. Well, they couldn't do it on Friday, because Friday was the annual Sabbath, and then the weekly Sabbath. And so they were forced to wait until the end of the two Sabbaths that were back-to-back. And then Sunday morning, early in the morning, That's when they went there. At that point, they found out, well, he's already gone. And then some people say, well, now you've got a problem with 3 days and three nights. And the reason why you would have a problem, because again, some people decide in their own mind that 3 days and three nights have to be 12 hours, 12 hours, you know, three times 12 hours, multiply, and you have 72 hours. Christ never said it has to be complete 3 days and three nights. Man has invented that information in his own brain and imposed it on the scriptures. That's why we repeat it all the time, the third day. You know, if I'll see you the third day, the third day. It could be complete, you see. And indeed, in which case, if it is complete, you will make that mention, complete. Seven, you know, 3 days and three nights. He never said complete. So it could be, you know, lacking a few hours. And so it was. You find there 3 days and three nights. You see, he's killed on Thursday. So Thursday begins the first day. And then have that night. Then have Friday the second day. You see, and then have a full night. Two, the second full night. You see, and then have the Sabbath. That's the third day. And then have the night. You see, and the night, when you get to the night, well, Sunday begins the evening before. Not as it is here, you know, in our world, you know, 12 o'clock. No, it begins from even to even. You see, so when they came a few hours before, or a little while before sunrise, you see, it was still dark. So it was not sunrise. They came before sunrise. You know, you have the 3 days and three nights there. You know, they're not totally complete. But Christ never said they are complete. Well, what happens when we have decided in our own mind, because Christ made a statement, aren't there 12 hours in the day? Of course there are 12 hours in a day and 12 hours in a night, you see. But when you think about it, you know, realistically, even then, did you ever see a day, you know, that is 12 hours and night 12 hours? You see, 12 hour of night, you know. Summertime, they're longer. Winter, they're shorter. What do you do then? You see? Well, what it means by that, you know, the 12-hour and 12-hour is still there, even though, you know, you have summer and winter and things are different. But that does not mean that because there are 12 hours in a day, that when he says 3 days and three nights, that he meant 12 hours, you know, day, 12-hour night, for 3 days and three nights. You see, in that case he would have said complete. Because the culture of the time, and it is to this very day, and it is in every given language and culture in the world, When he says, I'll meet you the third day, or I'll meet you the third night, it does not have to necessarily be completely 12 hours, and then on that very moment, when it is over, then I'll meet you. You see? Rarely it would be complete. Generally it would not be. And so what happens when people insist in their own mind that it is a complete 12 hours because of that scripture that is totally unrelated to this? And yet, when we relate it in our minds, well, then we are stuck. But then again, you've got a problem here. If you insist on the 72 hours, 12 day and 12 hours, and you cannot have a Passover that year in 30 AD on Wednesday, because then, you know, if it was on Wednesday, you know, Thursday will be the holy day, and Friday they would have been free to come and bring the spices. How come they couldn't do it? For the simple reason. It was a back-to-back Sabbath. You see? So Thursday was crucified, Friday night was Passover, Thursday night Passover, Friday is the holy day, which began the evening before that with the Passover, in accordance with Moses, as God told him in Exodus 12, on the 14th day of the night at even it shall eat the Passover, and on the 14th day of the night, he shall begin the days of unleavened bread, because both of them begin the same time. So all the disciples repeat the same information, you know. On the first day of unleavened bread, they came and asked him, when do you want us to prepare for the Passover? You see? Well, anyway, a lot of pieces of information, you know, and most people, you know, don't think too much about these matters. But there are those who always, you know, like to look into the nitty-gritty and details, which is very important. And, you know, they may have more questions about it. In other words, you know, consider the whole matter, as Solomon said, that if we do not consider the whole matter, not only some, but the whole matter, you know, we become fools. Because wisdom does not come out of considering only parts of the story, but the entirety of the story. And many of us sometimes, you know, make that mistake. Every single one of us, we do not consider the whole matter, we become fools. And we think that we are in the right, in the know, and we're, you know, convicted in our minds, and then don't confuse me with the facts after that anymore. That's not how we come to the unity of the faith, and that's not how we grow in knowledge and understanding. You know, if we know it all, we'll never grow anymore after that. Even God himself grows up in knowledge and understanding as time goes by. So this is what we read here. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, another place says when it was still dark, so it was not sunrise yet, it was before sunrise, and when they came to the tomb, bringing the spices which they prepared, but they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. You see? Well, later on, when you come to John, you read that as they were coming over there, there was an earthquake and everybody was scared to death. So the earthquake was happening around the same time when they were coming to the tomb, which was before sunrise, but it was Sunday already. It was not Sabbath. It was Sunday. You see? So, you know, in essence, what became later on is the Catholic Church, you know, said a Sunday Sunday resurrection, they are correct. It was on Sunday. But what they are not correct about, it was not at sunrise. It happened before that, because Scripture makes it very plain. While it was still dark, that's when they came, before the dawn. And again, this is Mordecai Joseph.